You're listening to Retail Gets Real, brought to you by the National Retail Federation. Join us for a look inside the world's largest and most interesting industry. And now your host, Bill Thorne.
Welcome to Retail Gets Real, where we talk about the industry that impacts everyone, every day, everywhere. I'm Bill Thorne with the National Retail Federation, and I'm joined today by my co-host, my colleague, and my friend, Jessica Hibbard. Hello, Jessica.
Hello, Bill. How are you this fine day in Chicago?
I'm doing great. Just off the Magnificent Mile, retail is alive and well.
Yes, we are here at Retail's Academic Symposium, hosted by the National Retail Federation and NRF Foundation, and talking to a lot of really cool people.
Yeah, and we got a really cool guest. Her name is Karen Katz. She's the CEO of Neiman Marcus. She's on the board of directors for the National Retail Federation, and she's chair of the National Retail Federation's Foundation. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
We're glad you're here. So, Karen, this is an easy one. Tell us your career story.
I'm not one to really talk about myself, but I'll give you a little snippet of things. So, I grew up shopping at Neiman Marcus. So, having grown up in the city of Dallas, where Neiman Marcus was founded 110 years ago, I've known the brand literally my entire life. I went to the University of Texas, and when I was graduating from Texas, I was making a decision about whether I should pursue a retail career or go get my MBA. And so I made the decision at that time to apply to two retail executive training programs and two business schools. And I got accepted to two and rejected from two. So I got accepted to the University of Texas MBA program, but I got rejected from the Harvard Business School. And I got accepted to the Foley's training program, which is now part of Macy's, but I got rejected from the Neiman Marcus executive development program. So I like to say that success is sweet revenge.
I'll say.
But Neiman Marcus found its way into my life. So I went to work at Foley's for a few years, and 32 years ago, wow. I joined Neiman Marcus after just a few years of a retail career, and I've had kind of an extraordinary career doing a little bit of everything over the last 32 years.
You know, as you look back and you think, was that the career path? I mean, if you thought of yourself doing something different, what would it be?
Well, you know, originally I had thought about going to law school, but recognized that that was probably not the right path for me. So I don't know. When I look back, it's hard to kind of even imagine doing anything but what I've been doing. I've had so much fun, and I have to pinch myself some days that I've had such an amazing career, and I feel really, really lucky to have worked with extraordinary people in an extraordinary industry that actually has allowed women to achieve things, much faster and probably earlier as an industry than many other industries. So
there are so many remarkable women in retail.
I really
admire that. What was your very first job at Neiman Marcus? I'm curious.
I was an assistant store manager for our very smallest store at the time.
Cool.
And I remember thinking that even though I grew up at Neiman's, I kind of wasn't aware of the prices of different things because, you know, I guess my parents were paying the bills, so I, you know, didn't really. And I remember when we sold a bag in the store one day that cost, $1,700,
wow.
Thinking to myself, this is many years ago. Oh, God, it was more than my rent. It was like a wake-up call. Obviously, I got intoxicated by all of it and stuck around. So.
That's cool.
You look at the Christmas catalog, you kind of get a sense of the prices.
Exactly. So.
So as you mentioned, Neiman Marcus is an established retailer, more than 100 years old. But even the oldest companies are thinking digital first nowadays. And I was wondering if you could talk with us a little bit about your push to bring mobile and make that the new door to the store. I think we've heard you say that before.
Yeah. So, you know, we're very lucky at Neiman Marcus Group that we entered into the digital e-commerce space very early on. No other department store was online when we started 18 years ago. There was no other luxury store. I was lucky enough, or at the time I didn't think I was lucky, but looking back I was lucky, that the CEO of the company asked me to go run the business when literally just as we were getting started with the business. It was just a few weeks old. And I knew nothing about nothing because no one knew anything about the e-commerce business. We had a very well-established catalog business. So all of the things that are the engine that drive e-commerce, we had in place. A call center, the way we pick and pack goods, all of that. So it was really the front of the house, the websites that no one knew anything about. And so I think because we've been in the business so long that this natural evolution of e-commerce to mobile, digital, social, all of that has come, I think, fairly naturally. What hasn't been quite as easy for any traditional retailer is to really absorb the major disruption that has happened in the industry. And I think that's the part of the business that on one hand is so fascinating, and on the other hand is just so scary some days.
Oh, yeah.
The pace of the disruption. So I feel like we have done a good to great job on making sure that we're evolving as a company from just e-commerce to mobile to digital, digital first, all of those kinds of things. But it's really trying to absorb the impact of all of the disruption that is, you know, head spinning some days.
Yeah, I mean, between the technological devices that we have as consumers and then all of the smaller, newer players popping up as competitors, it's just an incredibly evolving space.
Exactly. Yeah.
No, you know, technology plays such an important role in terms of what you're doing with the consumer, but it also plays an important role in terms of what you're doing in the store. And Neiman Marcus is just so well known for that personal touch. Makes such a big difference. How do you basically walk that line where you adopt the new technologies, which are going to make the systems work better, but at the same time, keep that personal touch?
Yeah, so it's something that we spend a lot of time thinking about and talking about, and it is a very fine line because we are all about highly personalized service, and but there is a real place for technology in the store. So we developed with a young guy that we met a few years ago. He had come up with one product that we had tried in the store, a memory mirror where a customer could stand in front of the mirror. She could try on clothes, record kind of what she was trying on, see herself in a 360-degree manner, and then, you know, send the videos to her friends and family to kind of have them be part of the experience. And that was well accepted by our customers, but that technology led us to an even more important technology that actually really mattered to our customers. And that's something that we call the makeup mirror. And every woman who wears any bit of makeup has a makeup mirror that she applies her makeup in. And now we have these makeup mirrors in our stores. And when you have your makeup done by a makeup artist in one of our stores, which is free of charge, so it's a great experience. It's a great, you know, way to have a luxurious moment at Neiman Marcus. We can record the makeup artist doing your makeup, and we send the video to your phone so that the next day, that night, 3 days later, you have a video of exactly how that makeup was applied. It has been a huge hit with our customers because she feels like one of the hardest things for women is they get their makeup done for a special event and then they have no idea, you know, what went on because they were busy chatting. Now they have a video of it, and it's been just a huge success with our customers. So one technology led us to another, and it's been a big success. That's what we're looking for, not just technology for technology's sake, but technology that can really change the shopping experience for the customer.
It makes sense because on YouTube, makeup tutorials are enormous. So huge.
It's huge.
And having that kind of video, I could see why people love it because it's totally personalized, your makeup and your own look. So that's really cool.
Your own YouTube station.
Yeah.
Right in your bathroom.
Yeah.
So you... I'm going to switch it over a little bit to the National Retail Federation Foundation. You're the chairman of that. And my question to you is, you've been involved and engaged for a pretty significant period of time with the board of directors for the National Retail Federation. This emphasis on careers, on jobs, on students, on awareness, why is this important to the industry?
Well, I think that it's important for many different reasons. I think that the retailing industry for many, many, many decades was one-dimensional. It was about buying product, which is still very important to the life of most retailers, and selling product in a store. And so you needed a fairly narrow group of individuals to help you do that. And many of us as CEOs, you know, we had one experience or the other or both if we were lucky. But what the kind of people we're going to need in this industry today, tomorrow, and, you know, for the future of retailing, it's very different. And I think that, yes, of course, we need great store leadership and people who want to work in stores and make a career of being a professional sales associate. And yes, of course, we want buyers who are passionate about product and who are creative and entrepreneurial and seeking out kind of the latest and the next. But we also need technologists, and we need people who are involved in and who love data and who love thinking about data and bringing together data. And so I think that the kind of workforce that is needed for the next generation of retail is much more vast than the way people think of traditional retailing. And I think that part of the reason I was interested in taking on this role as chair of the foundation is because I'd like to help make a difference in how we talk to people about the next generation of people who want to come into the retailing industry. It's still an incredibly exciting industry. You know, just trying to figure out and anticipating the wants, the needs, and the desires of a customer, that's not easy. But it's a much more complex business than when I got into it when I graduated from the University of Texas a few decades ago.
So if you are a person who's interested in technology, it seems like retail would be an interesting industry to work in. I mean, who doesn't want to develop something like a memory mirror?
Well, you think about, all of the many startups that have actually been born, lived, thrived, survived. Some in Silicon Valley, so many of them were consumer-centric kinds of businesses. And so at the heart of those kinds of businesses is retailing. And so what a better place to learn is in a place that is all about the consumer. And it may be through the lens of data analytics. It may be through the lens of, you know, website development. It may be through the lens of, you know, being a buyer. But there's so many lenses to really try to understand the consumer. And retailing is closer to the consumer than almost any business. And it's a great learning and training ground. And then if you happen to get addicted to it, you may never want to leave.
True that. So we had the opportunity, Karen, together to take a trip to Cuba. And it was several of our retail leadership with the National Retail Federation. It was very eye-opening, I think, on a lot of levels. I don't know that a number of retailers had had that opportunity before. We had a number of meetings. What was your key takeaway from that experience?
Well, one, how very fortunate we are that we live in the United States where we have access to probably a lot more goods and services than we need, but it's such easy access because people in places like Cuba have no access. And I was struck by, we met with a number of retailers that are all government owned and operated, and I was struck by the fact they can't get basic products because of, you know, different kinds of embargoes that are put upon Cuba and those kinds of things. And without making this a political conversation, you could see that just that need to, whether it was to get lettuce or wine or Adidas or, you know, whatever the product category was, they were struggling to actually get the kind of product. And then, you know, I was taken back by, they probably were, you know, creative people, but they, as retailers, you know, we want to have some creativity in our life. That's part of what makes this business interesting. And it felt like that they, it's not that they they lacked creativity. And I don't know if that was because of the circumstances they were in or what, but they clearly, you know, had a mandate and they had to follow that mandate. And at the end of the day, you know, you walk away and you realize that capitalism is a good thing.
Yeah, and you could tell that that's what they wanted. They wanted to have that experience, that ability to have the differentiation of products. And one of the things that struck me was we did have the opportunity to eat at a couple of restaurants that were kind of they weren't government owned, and it's kind of a new thing for Cuba. And based on that experience, you'd think that they would see, wow, this is really good, and this could work in other industries as well. But there just didn't seem to be the desire.
Yeah. I think we were all struck at those restaurants that it was really beautiful dining experiences.
They were very proud of the food.
They really were. Everything. But they lacked certain, you know, ingredients that, you know, again, we take for granted that, no, we can't serve that tonight because we couldn't get access to this or that. And so, and I think that obviously is throughout the country at any given time, but there's definitely that desire because there was a sense of creativity and of ownership and a little bit of that entrepreneurial spirit you would have loved to have seen with the retailers that I'm sure they would like to have been experiencing themselves.
Absolutely.
Wow, we take so many things for granted. It's cool to have those experiences.
You have to go visit a place like that to truly appreciate how much you take for granted.
For sure.
Yeah.
Well, Karen, if I wanted to learn more about Neiman Marcus as a company and the people that work there, where would I go to learn that?
You know, I think that the best thing to learn about the company is to do two things. One, to go visit a store and talk to sales associates. I mean, I think that so many of them have this a very pragmatic view of the retailing industry because they're into the trenches and communicating with customers daily. And then to experience our website and just to dream about the kinds of products that you may never buy for yourself or anybody that's close to you, but go and just dream and look at all the beautiful products that we have online and really try to experience some of those brands that we were fortunate enough to do business with. And I think through those two experiences, you really can experience what Neiman Marcus is all about. It's we love to tell the story, but it's really about experiencing the brand.
You've got a great story to tell. So before we let you go, we have this part of the program. It's called Rapid Fire. What we want you to do is to answer the question that is posed. First thing that comes to mind, and I think that you'll be fine with this because it's not hearkening back to your MBA days. So let's go. Karen, what is your favorite thing about Texas?
I love the heat.
Really? All right.
Not the barbecue?
I like the barbecue, but I love the heat.
If there was a movie made about your life, who would play the part of you?
Oh, God, we have to think of somebody glamorous. gosh, oh, that's a tough one. Who's a beautiful brunette who's smart and gorgeous?
Julia Roberts.
Who? Oh, Julia Roberts. That's a good one.
Mm, yeah, that'd
I can
be
see
good.
It.
Yeah. All right.
So, what's the one app that you cannot live without?
I cannot live without my Fitness Pal.
All right. Well, last question: receipt in the bag or in your wallet?
Emailed.
Right.
That's what everybody's doing.
Digital anymore. First.
I still require paper. I'm a Luddite. So you can email it, but I like the paper too. Well, and thank you for joining us, Karen. And it was absolutely fantastic to learn more about what you're doing at Neiman Marcus and the industry in general. And thank you out there for listening to another episode of Retail Gets Real. We'll post more information about the topics we discussed today on our website, retailgetsreal.com, where you can also find links to other episodes. Subscribe to the show and give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. We're also on Google Play and Stitcher. Jessica, fantastic as always.
Bill, it was indeed fantastic.
And Karen, come back and see us, will you please?
Yeah, thank you all very much.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Retail Gets Real, brought to you by NRF. For more information about the National Retail Federation, visit us online at nrf.com.